weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
Huge thanks to Conor Bain for driving us through the afternoon. It is Friday, the 20th of September. I'm Oisín Coyne and you're listening to Game On. Coming up between now and Culture Night Live from the Roisin Dubh in Galway at 7. Alan Cawley joins us to look ahead to a huge night in the League of Ireland Premier Division title race. We'll have Fergal Brennan previewing match week 5 of the English Premier League. Gavin Casey builds up a big night of boxing at the Three Arena. And Jane Mangan gives us the rundown on the weekend's racing at the Harvest Festival, which gets underway in Listowel. And to top it all off, we'll hear from Leinster captain Jack Conan ahead of their URC opener against Edinburgh. As always, if you want to get in touch with the show, you can text us on 51552, WhatsApp 087 187 9200, or we are on X at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Good evening. Happy Friday to you all. Alan Cawley is here with me in studio. Alan, how are things?
I'm good, Oisín. How are you?
I'm very well. I'm very well. Good to see you. Before we get into the big night ahead and the big weekend ahead, what about the week in the Champions League? Have you got used to the new format yet? Because
yeah.
I think I'm still wrapping my head around it.
Well, I think a lot of people are, Oisín, but I've liked it. I have to say, we've had the last three nights of it, which is unusual as well. Normally we have the Tuesday and the Wednesday, but the Thursday night Champions League football, I fancy also a bit of that. So yeah, it's been really good. And what's strange, I suppose you're saying there, Oisín, about wrapping your head around it, I'm already looking at the league standings and there's 36 teams obviously, and there's going to be lots of to-ing and fro-ing, but you see Celtic sitting second of a 36 team table.
What a night that was. Liam Scales and Adam Eda as
well. Did really well. The manager, I think, was over there as well, the Irish manager, Hal Grimson, taking a bit of stick for not going to the games, but I think he was over there at the Champions League game. Obviously Bayern scored 9, so they're out in front, but I think it just needed a bit of freshening up. I just felt that I loved the Champions League, but I felt the early part of it pre-Christmas, that group stage was getting a bit repetitive, a bit kind of monotonous with teams coasting really.
You kind of knew who was going through after the third match, second match even.
Yeah, and it was always, I felt then after Christmas, when we kicked into the, I suppose, the second part of the competition, and then you get into the knockout rounds, that's when it used to take on a whole new kind of lease of life really, and a brilliant competition. We all love the games when it gets down to that stage. So I think it needed freshening up, and I think it gives the likes of teams like Celtic, who probably, as you said, after three or four games might have felt as though they were already knocked out of the competition, this gives them chance and hope as well. So I'm interested to see how it plays out, but I think it's been a good start this week.
I think the goal difference is going to be a big thing as well. You mentioned that Bayern result, so things could come down to the wires.
And it's like, as I said, the top eight, you can look at the table there, they go through at the moment. So the likes of Bayern, Celtic, Leverkusen, Aston Villa had a great win as well, and then you're into the teams from 9 right down as far as 24 who'll obviously go into a playoff round as well. So there's going to be lots of, as I said, to-ing and fro-ing between the positions, ups and downs, and it'll make more interesting for us, I suppose, in terms of the viewing of the competition as well. So I think it's been a good start and I'm looking forward to seeing it play out.
Looking forward to it as well, Al. Well, before we get back into the football in just a moment, let's take a look at the other headlines in the world of sports, starting with golf. And at day 2 of the BMW PGA Championship at Wentworth, England's Matthew Baldwin leads by 3 shots on 13 under par. Rory McIlroy is 7 under after 15 holes. Shane Lowry on 6 under par after 15 as well. Tom McKibben on 2 under through 17. Patrick Harrington on 1 under par also after 17 holes. And Simon Thornton is down on 5 over with 1 to play and just won't make the cut. The new rugby season kicks off tonight as well as Leinster go to Edinburgh. We'll hear from tonight's captain Jack Conan ahead of the game later on. And tonight in the Airtricity Premier Division, leader Shelburne will bid to improve their recent patchy form when they travel to Galway. Bohemians play Drogheda United at Dalymount Park and St Pat's host Waterford. But the big match of the night sees second place Derry City host champions Shamrock Rovers in the live game over on RTE2 television. But let's head now over to the Ryan McBride Brandywell to preview the match with Adrian Eames.
How you doing, Oisín? Yeah, all set here at the Ryan McBride Brandywell. I know Alan was here last week and the conditions were pretty difficult, a lot of rain, but it's a lovely evening on the banks of the Foyle for this meeting of second and third, Derry City against Shamrock Rovers. Derry so impressive in that cup win over Shelburne last week. And now the question is, can they back it up? That's been the problem for Derry City and for so many teams in the League of Ireland this season, just backing up one performance after another. But they will have momentum, I'm sure, after that win. I'm sure confidence is sky high and training must have been really bubbly and buoyant during the course of this week. But They have found it difficult, Derry City, playing against Shamrock Rovers this season in 2024. Stephen Bradley's side have really had the Indian sign over them. One draw, but two wins for Shamrock Rovers over Derry City, including the 3-1 victory here last April. That was a very impressive performance. It was also live on RT2 television. So that's the challenge facing Derry City, who are 4 points down on Shelburne. Shelburne, of course, in Galway. That's a pretty sticky one as well for Damien Duff's side. Shamrock Rovers, they're in third, 8 points behind Shelburne. A victory tonight, and who knows, it seems like a long shot, you'd have to say, but you'd have to presume there'll be twists and turns on the run-in towards the end of the season. But if Shamrock Rovers could win tonight, well, their fans will start to believe the impossible dream could become a reality. You never know. They have an issue over Sean Hoare. We'll have to wait and see if he's been past fit to play. He picked up a knock in the win over Galway on Monday, so they're going to assess him. Ben Doherty for Derry, he was forced off just before halftime in that win over Shells in the Cup last Saturday evening. As I say, it's a lovely evening. Conditions ideal for this game of football. And two sides that like to play ball, so we're optimistic that it will be a good game.
Hopefully a good game, Adrian. I suppose, obviously, the stakes of the league on the line, and what a game, what an event it's going to be. But Derry obviously have the best home record in the league so far. 30 points gathered in their 14 games. And then you have Stephen Bradley's Shamrock Rovers, just one league defeat in their last seven matches. So it's going to be a cagey affair.
Yeah, you'd have to think so. I mean, I hope it's not cagey. I think we could do with another exciting, as you say, Derry with that very impressive home record, winning 9-3 draws of their 14 home games. They haven't won the league since 1997. They have a great chance. They're on the hunt for a double. Obviously, the whip hand is held at the moment by Shelburne, but that, as I mentioned, is a tricky enough assignment they have in Galway this evening. But if they could win that, and obviously if it's a draw here, that plays entirely. Obviously, a Shamrock Rovers win would also be good for Shelburne if Shelburne could do the business at Eamon DC Park this evening. So it could be a fascinating evening in store. But the onus on both these sides here tonight is to go for the win. And Derry, you feel there's very little room for slippage at this point in the season. But win tonight, and it would be a statement win on their part, given the way they took apart Shelburne by and large last week in the Cup. So if they could replicate that performance and maybe even improve on it and get the 3 points, that would certainly enhanced belief, which is bound to be sky high after the performance last Saturday.
I just want to bring you up on that as well. Do you think they can build on that? Because we've seen the league, it's so unpredictable this year, teams going up and down, and you can't really predict anything, can you?
Well, yeah, it has been a bit bonkers. You just can't rely on any team. I used to have the odd little bet, the odd little nibble every week. I've given up on that because you just can't rely on teams to perform here. And that has been the issue all season long. Even Shamrock Rovers, I mean, they haven't managed. They beat Sligo Rovers this night last week, followed it up on Monday in the West with a win over Galway. Two wins back to back. They haven't managed that since last April. So it's been a real feature of the season. And any team that can get on a roll and build up a winning momentum, then they're giving themselves a real shot at something. And that's why I just threw it out there that Shamrock Rovers, it's not beyond the bounds of possibility if they could finish strongly. Obviously, they got Europe coming into play very, very shortly as well. Look, in reality, it probably is a bit of a stretch to see Shamrock Rovers winning, but you just never know. So the onus firmly on Derry as the home side tonight. They'll have a huge home crowd behind them, and the pressure really is on for them to deliver the 3 points and just keep the pressure on Shelburne regardless of how they get on against Galway United.
Pressure on indeed. Adrian, thank you very much for that. Kickoff at the Ryan McBride Brandywell, 7:45, and live coverage of that game over on RT2.
Game on.
Football.
Now, let's pull Alan back into the mix. Alan, what are you feeling coming into this game?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the game, first of all, Oisín. I think it'll be an exciting game because obviously we were up there last week covering the game against Shelburne, and Derry put in probably one of the best performances I've seen all season. They were absolutely outstanding. So that should give them huge confidence going into this game. You mentioned, Oisín, about their home form being the best in the league as well. So they have to have huge confidence going into it. They're up against the team, Shamrock Rovers, obviously, who've won the last four league titles. The form has been very indifferent this year, but the last two games they've come up with two very good victories in the league, and that's given them a bit of momentum now. And all of a sudden, as Adrian was saying there, people are suggesting that they could be in with a slim chance of potentially retaining their crown. It's 8 points off Shells, it's four off Derry. Like, if we're saying Derry are still in a really good position to win the league, if Shamrock Rovers were to win tonight, they're only a point behind Derry.
Mad.
So you'd have to say they're very much in the mix. So I think it's a huge night not just a huge game. I think it's a huge night in the League of Ireland with that game in Derry, and obviously Shelburne away to Galway as well. And it'll be very interesting viewing just to see the league table after, I suppose, for at 10 o'clock tonight, Oisín, because as I said, if Shamrock Rovers were to win tonight in Derry and have a good recent record up there as well, I think it puts them back in the mix.
Isn't it mad though to see where Rovers are, and we're saying they're back in the mix, and then you look at Waterford and Sligo, there's only 2 points between them.
Yeah, but I just can't see, I suppose, when we're saying they're back in the mix is because of the fact that they've won the last four league titles, also with the squad depth that they have and the quality that they have, Oisín, and it's going to take something remarkable really for them to win the league from here. But if there's any team capable of winning the next five or six on the bounce, it's Shamrock Rovers because of the quality that they have. They beat Sligo Rovers very well in the game we covered last week, albeit Sligo Rovers had a man sent off and the game was kind of over at that stage, but they were still ran out comfortable winners. That's two on the bounce. If there's any team in the league capable, as I said, of winning the next four or five on the bounce and putting themselves in a really strong position, and if you contrast that to Shelburne's form, who are sitting top of the league at the moment, they've only one win in seven, so it's hard to fancy them going on a run of three, four, five wins when you think they've only one win in seven. Now, I did mention off the back of the defeat last week that if you were to say to Damien Duff, with seven games to go, you'd be 4 points clear in the league, he would have snapped your hand off at the start of the season for that. So I think it's just, it'll be interesting to see their reaction tonight, Oisín, off the back of that defeat, and basically just resetting and saying to the players and the group of staff that we've seven games to give this a right crack, we're still in pole position, and try and go out and win the league.
And M&DC Park is not a good place for Shelburne to be. They haven't won a competitive fixture in Galway since August 2020.
Wow. So there you go. We're talking about like recent run of form, one win in seven. That's 4 years for
there you go.
Not winning in there. So and what struck me really today as well, Oisín, the bookmakers rarely get much wrong. And when I saw actually the price of Shelburne, the league leaders away to Galway, and they were rank outsiders. So it was an amazing stat really when I saw that. But Damien Duff has kind of done an unbelievable job all season. He has kind of set up this siege mentality, if you like. So he'll be reveling in the fact that people are beginning to write them off a little. There is certainly a wobble. He can't get away from that. More worrying for me, whatever about the wobble, was the manner in which they lost the match last week. They were unrecognisable really from a Damien Duff team, because what we've seen all season is how well organised and disciplined they are, so structured in their shape defensively, and then obviously they can nick a goal, but we just didn't see any of that last week, and Derry comprehensively beat them last week. So I think it's a huge night, Oisín. I think there's a couple of matches spread around the country tonight, but I think it's a massive, massive night in terms of league. And I think if we're looking at the league table at 10 o'clock, I think we might have a different discussion on what we're having now.
Obviously a big you mentioned the matches all around the country. Dalymount Park, Bowes versus Drogheda. Big night for Drogheda to maybe push themselves out of that playoff spot and away from relegation as well. But obviously a big night for Bowes, it seems, every week, as they're, I suppose, maybe still trying to find their feet under Stephen Kenny. Is it kind of settling in? Has he made a real impact on the team?
Yeah, I think with Bowes, to be fair, the last three or four weeks I've seen the games and they have turned the corner. Since Alan Reynolds came in, Oisín, it's been a bit of a slog for them. But to be fair to Alan, he's trying to put his imprint on the team, and that takes time. Like, we see that with all the managers, that takes a bit of time. And he is basically, he inherited a lot of players that I suppose he didn't want, and now the fact that he's putting his imprint, bringing back the likes of Dawson Devoy, Ross Tierney, and I have seen a change in their form. They've been very, very good. They obviously beat Shamrock Rovers last week as well, or a couple of weeks back. So the form has certainly turned around, you would hope. Big night for them. They have to get the victory at home to Dalymount. But Drogheda have been on a brilliant run of form themselves, Oisín, and they've put themselves ahead of Dundalk. Obviously we know the Dundalk problems, but they've put themselves ahead of them on the pitch. It's been nothing to do with Dundalk's off the field issues. Drogheda are ahead of them on merit, and they've played really, really well. They've got themselves into a semi-final of a cup, so that'll be a tough game for Bohemians. But I just fancy the fact that they're at home. I think they've turned the corner. I would just give them the slight edge tonight.
I mentioned Stephen Kenny there out of context completely. I should say his St. Pat's side, Waterford at Richmond Park, has he really got a real, I suppose, a real feel for this Pat's side in the last couple of months? Because Waterford have been brilliant this year. I watched them a lot in the first division over the last while, and or the last couple of seasons, and we maybe thought without Ronan Coughlin they might have struggled up front, but it just hasn't been the case.
Yeah, they've been a great addition. Like Galway, both of those teams coming up have acquitted themselves really, really well. Keith Long's done a great job. I think their away form is suspect. At home they're very, very strong, and you mentioned it, has Stephen Kenny got a tune out of them. You look at their European results, and I think that's given them huge confidence, Oisín. And something like what I mentioned with Alan Reynolds, he's beginning to put his imprint on the team as well. And if you're looking at the table, which is obviously very condensed in terms of Shamrock Rovers back down as far as St. Pat's, there's only 7 points between them all. I think St. Patrick's could be the outsiders to try and push for that European place. They will fancy, maybe if Derry were to go on and win the cup, 4th place might get them into Europe as well. So if you look at them, they're sitting on 38 points. If they were to go on a run of form, and I do think they're playing really, really well at the moment, so I fancy them to get the job done against Waterford tonight, and slight dark horses for a European position.
Huge fixtures in the League of Ireland tonight. Right, let's move across the water. England, the Premier League is back obviously this weekend. Busy week of Champions League football, mm-hmm. but back to the league action. And the big one on Sunday, Fergal Brennan joins us on the line. Fergal, Manchester City against Arsenal. Is it at the stage now in Premier League football where this match could actually, I suppose, nearly decide the title?
I think you'll have a big say in it, even at this stage of the season. The margin between Manchester City and Arsenal is so short, particularly based on the last couple of seasons. Last season it was just 2 points, and the brilliant run that they both went on at the back end of the campaign. It was that Arsenal defeat to Aston Villa that arguably, when you count up the points at the end of the season, probably cost them. And obviously they drew at Man City in that run as well. A win in that game probably would have got them the title. That's how tight it is. It's obviously a bit of a cliche, you know, titles are not won at this stage of the season, but they can be lost. And I'd be a fairly firm believer in that in this instance. And Guardiola in particular knows that these are the games that do decide it further on, because you don't want to be in a position where you're playing catch-up. Particularly the big topic at the moment is the fixture schedule and the amount of games. When there is those extra games in the Champions League, you throw in the cup competitions, international breaks, etc., etc., you can't afford slips. You need to have points in the bank, but then at the business end of the season to say, right, when you're kind of mapping out your plan, at least we don't have to face them twice more, or even maybe once more. That even if it's just a point in the bag, it's there, it's set, and we can kind of move on. I'm really looking forward to this weekend, because I think both teams so far this season have been good, but we haven't really seen them kind of ignite and kick on. Champions League in midweek for both of them, it was 0-0 for both teams. Man City frustrated at home to Inter, and Arsenal last night away at Atalanta probably would have been confident of maybe nicking a win. They didn't. How do they react to that, the two managers, and obviously the short window in between the games, particularly for Arsenal, to get back, get prepared, go to Manchester and have the biggest game of their season so far.
Obviously, you mentioned there the game in midweek. Arsenal maybe struggled a bit going forward. Is that really down to the lack of Martin Odegaard in the squad? Because a lot of question marks, are they really lost without him? But on the other hand then, Kevin De Bruyne is a 50-50 chance to be in the City team.
They are the creative hubs of their respective teams. It's just that Martin Odegaard, because of his importance to Arsenal, is more of an issue, because Manchester City obviously can't replace Kevin De Bruyne, but the players they've got that play in and around him can create more than their respective opposition at Arsenal, because they've just got so much talent available. The little stat that I kind of dug up about Martin Odegaard, first 3 games of the season, Arsenal had an XG of 1.4. The 2 games that he's been out, that's dropped to 0.7. You can kind of read into that what you will. But if you look at the types of performances, the Spurs derby last weekend, it was a very structured defensive performance. Use pace on the break, use set pieces that Tottenham have problems with. And last night against Atalanta, they were a bit more open, but it was still very apparent that Odegaard was missing. He's definitely out. There could be a potential that Pep Guardiola is just playing a little bit of a game with Kevin De Bruyne. He went off at half-time against Inter Milan and he looked like he picked up a bit of a sore knock. He'll be given right up until the last minute to see if he's fit. He might possibly just start on the bench, but Odegaard is a definite no-go for Arsenal, and that'll be a big loss, because if they're relying on the type of performance that they put in against Tottenham, against Manchester City, it might not work to the level of effect that it did against Spurs.
Alan, you've obviously had a good feel factor about Arsenal over the last couple of weeks. Do you think they have what it takes to get through City?
I've had it for quite a while, actually, now, not just over the last couple of weeks. I had it all through last year as well, just because of the progression that they've been on. And I suppose that's the only way we can judge a team, really, is if you're seeing progress and teams getting better year on year. And Arsenal have certainly been that. So I think they're primed to go on and win the title this year. Of course, it's going to be a massive challenge when we all look at the City, the quality that Man City have, and we all know that, and Arteta is fully aware of that as well. But I just think what he's built at Arsenal since he's gone in, really, has been really, really I suppose it's been really impressive, to be honest with you. And that's why I really liked them. And what I loved about last week as well, and I think this is why it'll set them up lovely for the game on Sunday, is the fact that they can play in two different styles. Obviously, on the front foot with Odegaard in the team, the quality that they have, you see them dismantling teams at home and winning comfortably, blowing teams away first 20 minutes, half an hour. And then you see them go away, and defensively, they're so sound and so structured. Obviously, against Spurs last week, we've seen that in the Etihad last year against Man City as well, so they'll have no fear going to the Etihad. And certainly in terms of the fact that Man City dominating the ball, dominating possession, that won't fear Arsenal either, because they're quite comfortable out of possession because of the shape and the structure that they have, and we've seen that last week. And what people don't understand sometimes is you can actually control a game out of possession as well, and that's exactly what they did last week, Oisin.
On that, Fergal, how solid Arsenal are at the back, Saliba and Gabriel, how can they manage Erling Haaland at the weekend?
Well, they did a good job against him last season. He didn't have a shot on target against Arsenal, and that was the only defensive duo to shut him out in two Premier League games. So they, I wouldn't jinx it and say they know how to handle him, but they have the capability to handle him. And I do think that Haaland, when he comes up against certain types of centre-backs, it does cause problems for him, because he does like to get dragged into the physical battle. And if that puts him off, not necessarily puts him off his game, but if it stops him focusing on what he's so incredible at, which is bulldozing through and scoring goals, that causes problems for Man City. Gabriel, we saw in the derby last weekend, he'll be itching to go toe-to-toe with Haaland. Saliba, different kind of centre-back, so he'll be looking to drop off. If Haaland wants to dash into the space and stretch Arsenal, he'll be the one to deal with that. So it's going to be very, very interesting. I think kind of man for man, it will be Gabriel and Haaland that'll be going hammer and tongs at each other. I think they can, and they've shown that they've got the ability to do it, but it'll be very much a two-man job. They need each other collectively and individually to win their battles against him.
Al, that's Saturday's fixture, Man City Arsenal on Sunday. That kicks off at 4:30. But let's go, or Sunday, I should say. But back to Saturday then. Leicester City against Everton. Massive game at the King Power Stadium. I suppose neither side winning a Premier League game so far. Leicester on 2 points, Everton on zero. What are you expecting from that?
Yeah, well, the one really, whatever about Leicester only being on 2 points, they've just come up from the Championship. So I don't think many people expected them to have too many points on the board just yet. But the real concern is that Everton don't. And when you think of the last two matches as well, obviously being 2-0 up, and losing 3-2 and in the league, obviously, against Bournemouth and Aston Villa. Now, the game against Aston Villa, I thought they played quite well, to be fair, to get themselves in a position where they're 2-0 up, but that vulnerability just kicked in again of what we had seen the previous week against Bournemouth, and just they're conceding too many goals, which is unlike a Sean Dyche team. And Calvert-Lewin, who I always feel, he's just never clinical enough for me. Anytime he has to think about the chance, I worry. You never really fancy him. If it's something instinctive, he might score, fair enough, but anything where he's running in one-on-one and he has to think about it, I would always worry about him. And then they lost during the week as well in the EFL Cup and penalties to Southampton. So there's major worries and concerns, I'm sure, for Sean Dyche and Everton. So that's very, very hard to call. I would actually shade Leicester, because I think Leicester are decent enough at home. Vardy's had a good start, or kind of back to the Premier League as well. So I would fancy Leicester in that, and I'd be worried for Everton.
Just on Sean Dyche, Fergal, I suppose he was pretty bullish about the pressure on him after the Carabao Cup loss. Is he still the best option for Everton?
I think if the season is to go as it's currently panning out, I do think so. And I think that's why he is quite bullish and quite straightforward about these things, because he's been here before, obviously in the past with Burnley, and he was here last season with Everton. 2 points deductions, and he still kept them up. But I think that the defensive issue is the main concern for me. They fourth best defence in the Premier League last season. It was only Liverpool, City and Arsenal that conceded less goals than them. And then this time, they're bottom of the league, and they're bottom of the league for goals conceded. They've let in 13. It just looks a real issue of confidence. And I think the Villa game showed that as well. As soon as that first goal went in, you could see the nerves starting to go. And these are experienced players, but they just seem to have lost their way a little bit at the moment. But as for Dyche, there will be speculation. Even if they lose this weekend, the pressure will go up another couple of notches. But Everton are where they are. I know that might sound a bit reductive, but it is the truth. And he does offer, for my money, the most kind of bang for your buck of a Premier League manager that just about keeps you in the Premier League. The big thing for Everton is moving into that new stadium next season. They cannot be a Championship team. And I think Dyche, as cautious as he is, will keep them up.
The other Merseyside team in action on Saturday then, Alan, Liverpool versus Bournemouth, and we could see a star for Queevey and Kelleher.
Hopefully we do, Oisín, yeah, that's the word. Obviously Alisson seems to have a little bit of a niggle or an injury, so the suggestion is that he may not play and Queevey and Kelleher will come into the team, which would be great. We obviously had him in the last couple of games there playing for Ireland as well, and I thought he played really well. It could have been 4 or 5 against England only for him, so he's a very good goalkeeper. He spoke during that window, interestingly enough, about the fact that he wants to get out. He's made no bones about that. He wants to get out. The club stopped the move, he said, when he did try to get out. But I think it's important that if he is in the team, I said here last year when he was getting a run in the team that he needs to get himself into a position where he needs to be challenging Alisson. After that run of form, which he did do quite well, to be fair to him, they still always view Alisson as the number one. Of course, Alisson is an unbelievable goalkeeper, so maybe that's where Queevey feels is he's at the stage now where he's not really going to win that fight and he needs to get himself out. But it would be great to see him play. They had the setback last week, Liverpool, but I think Arne Slot has had a really good start to the season as well, as have Bournemouth. They've been quite good as well. So I think it'll be an attacking game. There could be a couple of goals, but I'd fancy Liverpool.
Fergal, Selhurst Park at 5:30 tomorrow, Man United versus Crystal Palace. United with that big win in the Carabao Cup midweek, but I suppose similar to the League of Ireland teams, just inconsistency. You don't know what way it's going to go with United.
No, not at all. And the midweek game, as you say, it sounds strange to say a 7-0 win can't be kind of held up as anything, but it is the truth. That they were playing against a side that were inferior to them. They were at home. They were absolutely expected to win and win comfortably, and that's what they did. But in the Premier League, you still just don't know what's going to happen. They were good against Southampton last weekend, but Southampton were very, very poor. They're down at the bottom of the league, or second bottom, for a reason themselves. They're very open and not really adjusting to the Premier League. And Manchester United do still have individual players that can finish off chances if they get enough opportunities, which Southampton gave them. In terms of this game this weekend, I think Crystal Palace this season have been good. Oliver Glasner's had a bit of extra time to work with them over the summer and try and get some of his methods really drilled into the players. They've also kept some of those important names as well. Elise obviously going to Munich, but they've still got Ebru Chiesa, Jean-Philippe Mateta, Mark Gay in defence as well, who's crucial to them last season. So I actually would tip for Palace here, and they've got quite a good record against United at home. I think it's the last 4 in the Premier League that they're unbeaten. They beat them last season, I think, at home as well. And I think particularly the type of players that Crystal Palace have got can really hurt a team like Manchester United, particularly someone like Eze. If you've got an indecisive defence or a defensive midfielder with him sniffing around 20, 25 yards from goal, he could have a field day if United are not on it. And I do fancy Palace. I've been impressed with them this season. And United, again, you just don't know what you're going to get.
Exactly, we don't know what we're going to get. Right, so the other fixtures on Saturday, first one up is West Ham versus Chelsea. Elsewhere, Craven Cottage, it's Fulham versus Newcastle, Aston Villa at home to Wolves, Spurs hosting Brentford, and Southampton at home to Ipswich. Then on Sunday, that big clash, Man City versus Arsenal, and Brighton against Nottingham Forest. We'll keep a close eye on that one to see if Evan Ferguson can get some game time. Fergal Brennan, thank you so much for going through that with us. We'll have plenty more of the world of sport coming up on the way. We'll look at boxing and a huge night ahead at the Three Arena.
RTE 2FM. Game on 2FM. Game on.
Boxing.
Game on.
Boxing.
Welcome back to Game On. Now, the UFC is back in town. However, this time Dana White and his accompanying entourage have exchanged the caged octagon for the canvas and ropes to host a night of professional boxing at the Three Arena. Cork prospect Callum Walsh and Dublin heavyweight Thomas Carty are set to take centre stage, with Walsh defending his WBC Continental Americas title and Carty continuing his undefeated run. The night promises to showcase the best of Ireland's rising boxing talent, and to look ahead to the action, Gavin Casey of the 42 is with us. Gavin, is the Three Arena the hottest ticket in the county tonight, I should say?
In the county, very possibly. I think it's culture night tonight, isn't it? And what greater sample of Irish culture anyway than watching a few lads bait the lugs off each other in a boxing ring. And on top of the guys you've mentioned in Callum Walsh and Thomas Carty, you've got a brilliant Dublin versus Kerry clash with Emmett Brennan taking on Kevin Cronin. You have Edward Donovan of Limerick taking on Craig O'Brien of Dublin as well. So a couple of nice little intra-county rivalries being settled in the ring, and looking forward to a brilliant night at the Three Arena.
And it is Callum headlining the card tonight, Gavin. He's had one hell of a journey over the past 3 years, hasn't he?
Yeah, it's been a really remarkable rise through boxing's ranks and to something approaching stardom, I guess, because he's a boxer who hasn't yet achieved a great deal in the ring, but certainly has a talent that would make some of the most important figures in the sport believe that he can get there. And look, you go back to the start of his journey as a professional boxer, he's 23 now. Going back to the pandemic, he was 20 odd. The gym was closed. He was still an amateur. He had lost in the senior final to Aidan Walsh, who went on to win bronze at the Tokyo Olympics. And Callum wanted to continue with his amateur career and get to Paris. And with the gyms closed in Ireland during lockdown, he went across to Los Angeles. And his father lives over there.
Not
so
a bad place to be, is it?
Yeah, chances are it was a decent idea. He was hauling lobster pots on a boat in Cork Harbour, trying to train away as best he could without the gym, and decided, look, I need to go somewhere where there's actually gyms open. He knocked on the door of the Wildcard Boxing Club in Hollywood, Los Angeles, which is run by a Hall of Fame trainer, Freddie Roach, probably the most iconic boxing gym on the planet, or certainly up there with them, and I would say almost certainly the most iconic boxing trainer as well in Roach. And Callum literally knocked on the door, and at the time the gym was only open to professionals. That was the kind of those were the policies in the States at the time. And Freddie said, look, it's a Wednesday, you can come in if you want, but you've got to spar, because Wednesday is sparring day. And Callum went in there, did his thing for 6 rounds, and he never left. And now he's 11-0 as a professional, with 9 knockouts, and he's headlining in his home country. So it's been a remarkable rise. And just to, I guess, give a little bit of background as to how it's come to this point so quickly. Yeah. While he was over in the Wild Card, he would have been put in touch firstly with Tom Loeffler, who's an excellent boxing promoter. He's the man who brought Gennady Golovkin and the Klitschko brothers to the masses over the last decade and more. And Tom signed him up. Callum decided to turn pro. Made a little bit of an impact in his first couple of fights, and then through Tom Loeffler he meets Dana White. You touched upon it at the top, that this is a UFC event, even though it's not mixed martial arts tonight, it's boxing. And that's because Dana White, a close friend of Tom Loeffler's, who really appreciates what Loeffler does in boxing and putting on good competitive fights with a fairly limited budget compared to some of the more recognisable names to us, like your Bob Arums and your Eddie Hearns. He looked at Callum Walsh and thought, I like the cut of this guy's jib, and he's backed him kind of unofficially for the last couple of years. He champions him at every turn on social media, where obviously Dana White, the president of the UFC, has millions of followers on a massive platform. And he's essentially footing the bill for this event tonight at the Three Arena, which is going to lose him what to a lot of people would consider to be a significant amount of money. To him will probably be loose change, but
that's certainly true.
This kind of bill would not be able to be staged by the majority of boxing promoters in the world, because it's one for Callum. It's not really a commercial pursuit, if that makes sense. So listen, he's got himself into a nice situation there, Callum, with three of the biggest figures in combat sports, not to mind boxing, in his corner or backing him profusely, and that has led to a chance to introduce himself properly, I think, to an Irish crowd tonight.
Talk to me a bit about that, the money on the line this evening. People looking from the outside, they just think, obviously, a major event at the Three Arena, there must be a lot going. But you mentioned Dana White might even be taking a hit on this.
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to get into exact figures purely because I just don't know the machine, to be totally honest. But say, for example, if you were to stage an event anywhere, obviously you're paying a fee to the venue. There are things like insurance costs, security costs, and particularly in the Republic of Ireland, it's unbelievably expensive to do this. Like, just to give you some context, and people can kind of apply these figures to a bigger venue, but like, to rent out the National Stadium and host a professional boxing event there, when you take into account all of the expenses, including trying to get an insurance premium on it, like, it's 10 times more expensive to do that than to go up the road an hour and 20 minutes to Newry and do it there. So like, there's a cost of business, or a cost of doing business in the Republic of Ireland, which absolutely applies to a professional boxing event. And yeah, Dana White basically is taking a hit on it, as far as I know, and from what I've heard, it's just like, look, I like Callum, he deserves a night out in his home country, he hasn't fought here yet as a professional, I'm going to pay whatever it is to allow that to happen. Obviously, they want to sell as many tickets as is humanly possible, but it's not going to be sold out tonight because, in fairness, Callum has had 11 pro fights. He's not in the... He doesn't quite have the profile of a Katie Taylor or a Bernard Dunn of yesteryear. He's making his way towards that point. So, yeah, if you're not selling out the arena and you're paying all that money to stage the event in the first place, it's going to cost money. It's not going to earn you much. But, as I say, Dana White is just fond of the kid and wants to give him a chance. And, listen, if you can make friends in high places like that, I suppose... Go for it.
Exactly. Dana White, not a bad man to be supporting you. Talk to me about Callum's opponent, his Polish opponent. 22 wins, 2 losses, 1 draw. Not a bad record.
Yeah, Przemyslaw Ranowski, he's never been stopped before, which is probably what makes him an intriguing opponent tonight, because Walsh is going to be looking to make a statement in front of a home audience and just to continue on that trajectory that he has been on of... typically getting rid of opponents. 9 times in 11 fights he's stopped his opponent and he's shown glimpses of being particularly explosive. You know, I spoke to Freddie Roach's trainer 2 days ago and Freddie was making the point that he can knock guys out with either hand, which is quite a rare thing actually in professional
boxing.
It's
impressive, isn't it?
I know for sure he's stopped guys in the gym over the years and that's what probably caught Freddie's eye as well, just that kind of raw power. I think it's yet to be seen if he has that kind of like Golovkin type power, right? Because he hasn't fought the level of opponent yet where it's probably been put to the test. And there's been a couple of guys, obviously, who've gone the distance with him as well, which might suggest that he's not like a nuclear puncher per se, but he has really good timing, really good speed, and he tends to put all of that together and resemble a pretty explosive athlete. And when you put that in the face of somebody who's never been stopped and obviously a very capable opponent whose only 2 defeats have been to 2 of Britain's top guys around that weight, it's kind of a decent acid test for Walsh, just in terms of how hard does he actually hit, how vicious is this guy really, and we'll find that out tonight. But the main thing obviously is winning first and foremost, because I think Ranowski would probably look at Callum Walsh and think, listen, I've fought twice as many times as you as a professional. Yeah. All the pressure's on you. This is in your home country. You're the big shot with hundreds of thousands of social media followers, with Dana White in your corner, with Tom Loeffler, with Freddie Roach, with a girlfriend in Tabitha Ritchie, who's one of the biggest stars in the UFC. Like, you have to perform. And most people will consider Ranowski there to be there just to make up numbers, which isn't the case at all. So he can go out and enjoy himself if it's possible when you're being punched in the head. And the onus is on Callum Walsh to look good tonight, I think, and not just win, but to look good while doing so.
Indeed, I think Callum will have to be at his best tonight. Now, it's the Dublin heavyweight Thomas Carty also on the card this evening. I think I heard him speaking in the media earlier today. He said he's not too many fights away from breaking inside the top 20 or even the top 10 in the world. Do you think he's on track to become one of the headline acts?
I think with Carty, because he brings such a sense of an event in his own right to a card like this, there's always a chance that he can be the guy whose poster is on the wall ahead of the next one or eventually at the 3 Arena. Like, he has fought there now, well, he's fought there twice before. Tonight will be his 3rd outing at the same venue. I was there for his first 2. They were on the undercard of both of Katie Taylor's fights with Chantel Cameron, and the atmosphere generated by Thomas Carty fans was pretty spectacular, and it was noticeable actually, particularly the first time where he was quite low down the card, the extent to which the venue emptied out after his fight because so many people went out to the bar or went to catch up with him and his friends and family, etc. And I would say that, like, the point he made about gate crashing the top 10 or 20, we had a chat about it only the other day, Thomas and myself, and he was making the point that having sparred with the likes of Anthony Joshua, Tyson Fury quite routinely, being managed by Dillian White, who was a world title contender for a long time from Britain, he reckons the margins between, say, where he is now, kind of roughly 80 or 90 in the world, and the top 10 are actually pretty slim, and that what'll get you there is just experience. So it's just about banking nights like these where you're fighting in front of beneath a raucous atmosphere, and he's got to take care of business again tonight. And similar to Callum, I would say he needs to look pretty good doing it. He's got a replacement opponent from Argentina who on paper probably isn't up to much. So a chance to make a little bit of a statement, grab a kind of a victory that will get a couple of shares and likes on social media. That's how you build your profile as a boxer in this day and age. And that's probably the job in front of Thomas Carty tonight. Be eye-catching, put yourself in the frame for bigger fights and maybe move from 80 or 90 up to the top 40 or 50 and take it from there. But he's got the kind of personality and he's got the kind of fan base, I would say, that there is something there. There is a lot of potential there for absolute certain.
Great stuff, Gavin. So that undercard featuring Dublin heavyweight Thomas Carty starts a little earlier than Callum's fight, just after 7 o'clock, and Callum in action headlining this evening at the Three Arena just around 10:30. Gavin Casey of The 42, thank you for your time as always.
Game on.
Boxing.
RTE.
2FM.
On 2FM.
Hey, welcome back to Game On as we turn our attention to racing.
Game On.
Racing.
Now we have domestic racing from Goran Park and Navan on Saturday. Well, there's racing also in Listowel on Sunday. And to look ahead to the events, Jane Mangan joins us on the line. Jane, how's the form?
We've just recovered from the indigestion that we all suffered after Leopardstown and the Curragh last week. That was quite the feast that we had. And while this weekend mightn't be as top quality, I'm sure it'll be as entertaining for those who are on the way to Kerry or indeed to Goran Park or to Navan.
Yeah, we'll concentrate on Listowel for the moment, Jane. I suppose it's the first day or the first of a 7-day event there. The Harvest Festival gets underway on Sunday.
Yeah, it's a huge deal, as anybody from Munster know, or anybody who'll tune into the major festivals throughout the summer. As you head into the autumn, September belongs to Listowel. 7 days, they get huge crowds, Ladies' Day, but of course Wednesday being Kerry National Day is the one that I always look forward to most. They have a flat card there on Tuesday where Ryan Moore, a guy who's fresh off the back of City of Troy at Sutherland a Gallop, the guy who's probably the best flat jockey in the world, he'll be making his debut at the Kerry track there on Tuesday. And we've a tidy National Hunt card there to start proceedings on Sunday as well.
Brilliant, brilliant. Take me back to Saturday then. Your pick of the race is Goran Park and Navan.
Yeah, so I would pick the Group 3 Denny Cordell Laverack at Goran Park on Saturday as the one that sticks out in quality to me. It's attracted 12 declared runners, including one look who was a winner at Killarney last time but only just got beaten in the Hurry Harriet at Goran Park over course and distance 2 runs ago. I think if that filly for Paddy Toomey can reproduce that effort, she'll take an awful lot of beating. Noel Meads Caught You Looking is in there after a good run in 4th place behind Analia in the Blandford at the Curragh last weekend. She, of course, was 5th in the Irish Oaks behind You Got To Me. She's got some very good form and the two of them should be very hard to beat. Throw in Dermot Wells' Azada for the Aga Khan. She's lightly raced. She could have more to come. And I think that's quite a tidy race there on Saturday.
Yeah, tidy indeed. Lots of them coming in good form. Now, I suppose back to the Harvest Festival, celebrated as one of the longest established race meetings in the country. Big, I suppose, big hype around this.
Yeah, I suppose it was always deemed as the farmers go there before the breeding season, before basically all the harvest is done and they have a little window in their schedule to go to Listowel. But really and truly, it's a place to go to meet family, to meet friends, to have a social occasion and to enjoy a bit of crack. Hopefully the weather stays as it is. I know it's meant to break, but you know, sometimes
you can,
down in Kerry
they
can get different weather to anything that Aaron can predict. But yeah, there's something a little bit different about Listowel. It's probably because they don't race all year round as well. There's a novelty effect. It's a great track, a really flat track. And I'll be down there broadcasting for Racing TV on Sunday and on Tuesday, so I'm looking forward to the journey down.
Brilliant. So you might have a chance then to get a look at the Kerry National that takes place on Wednesday. We always look forward to that when it comes around every year. And I suppose, what are you expecting from that?
Yeah, so it's a very valuable race, over €100,000 on offer, so naturally it's going to attract some very good horses. Last year's winner, Desert Moor House, is in there for Martin Brazel, off what looks like a fair enough mark of 144. The top weight is currently Fakir de Deriz, who got a pipe opener over hurdles in the last couple of weeks for Joseph O'Brien. Paddy Neville, who's an Irishman true and true, but of course he's now based in the UK, he potentially sends over his Brown Advisory winner from 2 years ago, The Real Whacker. Dual Sting champion stairs hurdle winner Florian Porter's in there. Zanahir's in there, who ran second in the Galway Plate, the Galway Festival, Am I Right? Who ran okay in the Galway Plate is in there for Henry de Bromhead as well. And if you're looking down the weights, maybe a Solitary Man can run a big race for Enda Bulger. It's going to be full field. I'd expect a maximum field of 18 to go to post. And the one beautiful thing about Listowel is we on RT don't cover it. And if people listening in don't have the subscription channel of Racing TV, you can tune in to TG Cahir. They do great coverage of it throughout the week. And on Wednesday at 4:20, you could do worse than throwing on TG Cahir to watch the Kerry National.
Brilliant, brilliant. I suppose as you mentioned, some of the familiar faces there we always kind of look out for. But I suppose overall, your pick of the bunch in there as well, because there's lots to look out for.
Yeah, my pick of the bunch is probably a Flooring Porter. I think he's got real class and I don't think he's beyond his years yet. He was a very good novice last year, and while it's a tight left-handed track, he does like going left-handed. So I think if Keith Donoghue can master his idiosyncrasies, I think he's got a great chance. But it'll be a fantastic renewal, no less. It's the best part of 3 miles. It's all about stamina, and God knows by Wednesday, Oisín, what the ground will be like. If it's sunny like this, or if rain comes, it'll change very quickly.
I'd probably have to head down there myself and make the spin down. So I suppose, Jane, tell me about the 7 days in itself, though. I suppose a lot of people, maybe even myself, falls into the bracket, maybe thinking about heading down to the stall, or Maybe you've never been down. You might want to test the waters with it. What can you expect heading down?
Yeah, you can a bit of everything. You've got flat, you've got National Hunt, you've got Ladies' Day, you've got the old folk, the farmers, the young folk who are trying to get off school, who are going to the weekend. You've got the Slán Ó Bhaile for amateurs. You've got a couple of bumpers in there as well. I just think from a racing perspective, we had the creme de la creme at the Curra and Leopardstown last week, but you could see a potential rising star to follow for the season ahead. You can see some familiar names who are well established throughout the season heading there, and you'll have all of the best competitors. You'll have Blackmore and Townend, Willie Mullins and Gordon Elliott, and they mightn't win because it's ferociously competitive. You're going to get big fields, and if you're a punter and you're looking for each way value, it can often be a place to be down there in the betting ring and hear the whispers and hear the murmurs, because there are people who line up their horses like they do for the Galway Festival. They line up their horses for Listowel, and it's not just a mistake these things happen. It can often be a plan.
Fiercely competitive indeed. There you have it, the big one down in the kingdom in Listowel. The 7 day Harvest Festival underway on Sunday. 7 race card there with the first going to post at 2 o'clock. And that 7 race meeting at Goran Park, which gets underway tomorrow, the first of which is off just after 2:15, with the action underway in Navan at 2 o'clock on the dot as well. Jane Mangan, thank you as always for joining us, and enjoy the weekend.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Game on.
Racing.
RTE.
2FM.
Live music on 2FM. I'm falling
apart. The sensational Teddy Swims. Live in concert in Dublin. I've Tried Everything But Therapy Tour. Performing at 3 Arena on March 12th. Due to demand, an extra date has been added on March 13th. Teddy Swims. Tickets available now.
Live music on 2FM.
Hello, this is your captain speaking from the Red Click Control Room with an important message. Whether you've encountered some unexpected woolly traffic, or your washing machine turned the utility room into an all-weather paddling pool, or you're looking to insure your van for new business adventures, remember this. Insurance that's easy, insurance that's quick. Whenever you need us, you just need to click.
Red Click. Insurance that just clicks. Generali Seguros y Reyes Seguros SAU, trading as Redclick and Generali, is authorised by the General Directorate of Insurance and Pension Funds in Spain and is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland for conduct of business rules.
Rugby fans, assemble. Witness the action live on URC.TV as 16 elite teams chase the coveted BKT United Rugby Championship trophy. Can Glasgow Warriors retain the title, or will one of the Irish provinces be victorious this season? Watch all the games live on URC.TV to find out. Search URC.TV now for flexible pass options and cheer on your team this season. URC.TV is a paid online only subscription service for over 18s. See URC.TV for T's and C's. Want exclusive offers and rewards? Download the Maxol Loyalty app and enjoy a free Rosa coffee when you sign up. And get great savings on coffee, car wash and lots more. You'll find bags more at Maxol.
Kevin the Chippy showed us exactly how you win a game of Booby Trap Bingo.
The Laura Fox Show.
You are truly into your music, that's for sure.
I listen to 2FM all day.
Good.
Earphones.
Go on yourself, we love to hear it.
2FM, The Laura Fox Show. Weekdays from 9. It's almost 7 o'clock with Vitabiotics. The WellKid range provides essential nutrients for growing children, from vitamin D to omega 3. WellKid, nutritional support for growing kids. Game on 2FM.
Hello, you're welcome back to Game On. Turning our attention to rugby and the start of the URC season. First of the Irish provinces in action is Leinster away to Edinburgh tonight. Kickoff is 7:35. It's live on TG Carr. Jack Conan captains the side, and he's been speaking about the season ahead and a busy off season where he became a father.
What is new is we had a baby about 12 weeks ago, so still find my feet a little bit with it, but enjoying the process and definitely enjoying the learning curve that is fatherhood. We had a baby girl, Remy. Yeah, it's definitely different. I think it helps you kind of compartmentalize things a little bit and kind of puts in perspective what's a priority in your life, really. So I'm definitely trying to find the balance of it all. I love being probably the one big thing at the moment is I love being really early to things. I love being here, 7 o'clock in the morning. So still trying to find my feet with the kind of morning schedule of having a baby and doing all the bits and helping out my wife before I get going. So some days I can be a little bit on edge first thing in the morning, trying to get in here nice and early, but still trying to do that. So it's definitely a bit of a balance for me. So I'm still learning and still finding my feet. But other than that, it's great when you go home. You can kind of park rugby a bit more. I'm not worrying about training as much or reviewing things. I'll try pick that up on the day off a bit more than doing it in the evening time, which I probably previously would have done. So just makes you realise what's important in life, and you go home and make sure you're present and conscious of how you are around your family and things like that. So it's been great. I'm absolutely loving it now, I must say. But my wife's been fantastic. She's been really calm and patient, and it's definitely helped me being calm and patient with it all. And neither of us are pros, and this is both our first time around, so we're learning together, and we're slowly getting there. I feel like we're doing an alright job. So definitely life is very different this pre-season than it had been previously. I know we've had a lot of adversity over the last few years here in particular, and people might think, oh well, you still haven't won it in a while, but we have the quality here in the players and the coaching staff that we're going to keep knocking down that door, and it will happen. People just need to trust the process and keep the faith and keep on moving forward and progressing as a team. So you want to have success with your mates, you want to bring that to the club. And I think because we've done it in the past, and there's a good cohort of lads who would have been there in 2018, especially for Europe, who would have had the pleasure of experience what winning Europe is like, I think it just makes you that bit hungrier. Then obviously after the disappointment of the last few years, I think it just spurs you on, and you want that for the rest of the lads who haven't experienced it. You want like Caelan, as you spoke about, being captain, you want him to be able to lead us to a final and get a win and get a fifth star. So it does make you hungrier, having had a taste of it in the previous, and just wanted to get back to that mountaintop of success and performance. So I think it's good to have that mix of experience of the older lads who've done it, and then the younger lads coming through pushing us on, who are so hungry to have that success.